Okay, you're very welcome into the second hour of the 9 till noon show. A caller says, because of the staff and my surgery and treatment in Letterkenny University Hospital, I'll be 20 years cancer-free next year. My brother's having cancer treatment at the moment and is receiving timely, excellent treatment and care there. Well done and thank you to the oncology staff. Delighted that you are, well, effectively, if it were cancer, a breast cancer patient, delighted that he'd be one of the 13 out of 100 for that quarter. But I'm delighted that he is progressing well, and I'm so pleased that your treatment worked so well. Was a business case presented to resolve the issue for once? Once again, was no business case presented to resolve the issue? This is across all hospitals. I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to there. My apologies. Caller says, this is life and death. Delay in treatment means death. Why are the people of Donegal not screaming? Well, they have the platform here. The simple solution is simple. We need to move non-cancer patients from the service to another area and allow space for cancer patients in those chairs. Another, Letterkenny Hospital continuously robs Peter to pay Paul. This has been going on for 2 years. Why is nothing being resolved? Donegal doesn't matter, or the people of Donegal don't matter, says that listener. We do matter, and that's why we keep pushing, we keep going, we keep advocating for ourselves. That's what we're doing. We are definitely at a disadvantage based in Letterkenny, Donegal in general, says this listener. My son waited 9 weeks for a call back to Letterkenny Hospital after a follow-up visit to outpatients. He died 9 weeks later from diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. It's so frustrating to see how people in other countries are treated. We pay the same taxes and deserve the same treatment. I'm incredibly sorry to hear of the passing of your son. It is an awful thing for you have to be having to live with, but especially when there are, I presume from the wording of your text, question marks about the timing and the process of identifying his condition. A hearing aid was found at the festival at Aranmore Island. If anyone can help, please ring. We have a number here from Rosaline. Those hearing aids can be very expensive. So if you are hopping about and you lost your hearing aid, please get in touch with us and we'll get you in touch with Rosaline, who has it. It's the type of thing if people lose, don't know where they lost it and they think it's gone forever. Well, it's here. We don't have it literally, but we have a caller who has it. Why would anyone want to return to Ireland as the cost of living is rocketing day by day? Housing being the main issue, followed by energy, groceries, healthcare and motor insurance. The list is endless. There's a record amount of savings in this country on deposit, and there are quite a large percentage of the population that are doing okay. And maybe those who moved away are coming back to a house that they have. Maybe they were renting it out and now have, you know, put the tenant out so they can move back in and they feel set up for life. You know, maybe that's it. It's possibly that. Or maybe the grass isn't as green on the other side as some people. You know, we often talk about how difficult this country is, and I know that myself. And then we presume, like many people that come here, I suppose, we presume that life is going to be so much better elsewhere. But firstly, often, sometimes your heart is at home, your family's at home, and you want to return to that. Or maybe you realise that there's a housing shortage in Australia. Maybe there is a bit of an anti-immigrant sentiment growing in Australia as well. I don't know the ins and outs of it or wherever you might go. But there's going to be a certain amount of people that travelled away and thought, right, you know, it's the land of opportunity, great weather, loads of money, handy access to an apartment, and they get there and maybe it's not quite, if you don't know the right people, maybe it's not quite like that. So maybe that's what it is as well. You know, we often put this country down, presuming everywhere else is better. As bad as things are here, maybe they're just not as good as people might think elsewhere as well. A caller says, imagine you went and stood outside the convent all day, every day, Greg. You'd be in prison by the end of the week. Absolute joke. The parents are letting this man hang out there. Never mind the law. If my kids were at the school, I'd be chasing him away every morning without fail. But I mean, his protest is that he's trying to protect your kids. Maybe you don't agree with his opinions. But, you know, there are those that believe what he's doing is actually for the protection of kids in there. Who's to say? It's one of those issues. I don't think he's going to achieve anything turning up. He's going to end up back in prison. I think he needs to, you know, maybe use his platform to try and fight things a different way. Get on with his life. Life is very, very fleeting. It's very, very short. And he probably should go on and enjoy his life. And of course, he's passionate at what he believes in, but people close to him need to say, right, you know, you flogged that horse. Maybe you can use social media, TikTok or something to keep campaigning if that's what you want to do. But at this point, I think his actions are whilst many might believe they're justified, many might admire his determination, it's a bit weird now. I think it's a bit weird turning up at a school years later that people don't really want you there. Asylum seekers are not considered as immigrants in all migration statistics, neither are undocumented migrants, so your figures are not actually accurate. I'll double check that, but in terms of the population, I don't know, there's two sets of CSO figures. We've had a very small increase in the population, but there's a couple of things in that. So, you know, that could be people that have moved here, replacing those, and I don't mean that in the way that word's used, I mean literally in terms of numbers, replacing those that have emigrated. So that's why maybe we're relatively static in the population. I'm not sure what it is. Someone else can dig a bit deeper into those stats. I probably will open up that CSO spreadsheet myself and see what the story is there. We know there's about 8,000 or 9,000 people living in Donegal that would be under your classification. I think it's 7,000 or 8,000 or 9,000. So that figure is not a secret. So if you want to add that onto it yourself, there you go. Right, we're going to get more reaction to the issues at Letterkenny University Hospital. Just the news we covered extensively in the first hour. 13% of patients post-surgery in Letterkenny University Hospital receiving chemotherapy within the key performance indicator, the useful time, 8 weeks. Then we heard also from an oncologist who says beyond 12 weeks, maybe this certain types of these treatments are ineffective, yet people are going through the side effects of it. It's not insignificant. It's very important. So we'll have that and much more coming up over the next hour and 45 minutes here on the 9 till noon show. And I want to say good morning now to, hopefully I can say good morning to Deputy Pearce Doherty. Pearce, are you there?
I am, yeah. You can hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Good to have you with us. Okay, perfect. So we heard in the first hour that chemotherapy can reduce the risk of breast cancer returning after surgery, but it's not being given to many patients on time. Systemic treatments such as chemotherapy or immunotherapy following surgery are aimed at reducing the risk of cancer coming back in the future. Now, unfortunately, Letterkenny tops the list in the period covered by this investigation. 13% of people with breast cancer attending Letterkenny University Hospital had this crucial treatment on time in the first quarter of that year. So this year, sorry. That means effectively the rest from that 13%, 87% didn't. And then we heard in the same report from an oncologist that talks about the fact that this treatment after 12 weeks sometimes can be completely ineffective. It's very, very timely. It's unfortunate. Again, we're topping another list, Pierce.
Yeah, look, it's not just unfortunate. It's absolutely unacceptable. We're talking about the health of our loved ones. We're talking about people, in this instance, who've gone through breast surgery. And, you know, not everybody will be as serious as everybody else. But there are a number of patients who will absolutely require that chemotherapy. And it would be very important for them to have it within the timeframes that have been laid down. And those timeframes have been developed on the basis of best practice of science, of, you know, issues in relation to a system with mortality. And it's just not acceptable that this is not just, you know, the figures that were released this morning show that we're, as you say, the top of the list, only 13% of patients received their chemotherapy within the eight weeks that's required. However, that's not just for the first 3 months of the year. That's what the report talks about. This has been going on now for a number of years. And that's what's really, really frustrating, that, you know, since right through from 2023, 2024, and now into 2025, that we have a situation where the vast majority of women who have gone through breast surgery who require chemotherapy then are not getting it within the time frame that's required. And that's simply not acceptable. And the worst thing is there are solutions there, Greg. Things can happen, things can be put in place that would actually ensure that people are getting the care, but they're not put in place.
What like then? Because in the HSC response, they reference four chairs that are there now. And then it's sort of like, you know, the surgical hub, which is fantastic. We need that as ASAP. But in between, they don't seem to be saying much. So they aren't identifying anything to improve the situation. What do you believe could be done to improve the situation that they're not doing?
Right. So, look, you know, as I was saying, sometimes things happen in hospitals, rushes, it's care, it's you know, it's dependent on pressure points and maybe a flu or something like that there that can put pressure on the hospital. We understand that and things can happen like that, but not for 2 or 3 years that this is going on. So that's where I'm completely outraged at this. So what can happen? Well, what is happening at the minute, what they've done is they've taken 4 inpatient beds and they've made them available. And that is robbing Peter to pay Paul. So that, in the response I got from the government in February of this year, when I was raising this issue, they made the point that this will only improve the situation slightly. It's not going to resolve the issue. But what they've done by removing the 4 inpatient beds is they've now caused another problem in accident emergency. In terms of being able to have inpatient beds, it's caused more pressure in terms of, our surgeries. And therefore, you have people who their mortality, their life expectancy is affected as a result of that. So what can be done? Well, one of the things that was sought funding for by the hospital, I'm informed, was they asked that the opening hours, the operating hours of the service be extended to 8 p.m. and also that it goes into the weekend. The government refused that. And that's just crazy stuff, because by refusing that, by actually, you know, penny pinching in relation to this here, what happens is you're putting people's lives at risk.
But just in relation to that, sorry, and hold the thought about the other thing, because people are already battling down there, and we heard it from former consultants, and I'm sure it's the same with consultants, to get operating time, to get theatre time, to actually get people to the point where they're on this waiting list for this treatment, you know, fighting to try and ensure that they can get as many breast surgeries done as possible. And I'm sure there are other areas of health. That's happening internally. That shouldn't have to happen like that. And then, you know, we have a situation whereby the government have told, we're not hitting these targets. It's demonstrable, right? 13% getting their treatment on time. And in fairness to the hospital, they come up with a solution, but that's knocked back by government. I mean, that's obviously we'll make specific inquiries to the Department of Health, but that's crazy.
Yeah, and look, GPs were in contact with myself, Pádraig McLoughlin, and indeed other deputies in as far back as in February, when data was given to the Health Northwest Health Forum at that time, and they alerted us to the fact that this request was rejected. They made the point that, you know, that what they're doing in the hospital in terms of the inpatient beds is just going to put pressure in another situation. So it'll look good. It'll look a bit better in terms of, you know, the percentage that are getting their chemo, but it's going to cause other problems. And really what the issue here is the issue is in twofold. It is capacity, so it is space that we need. Chemo is provided using a couch infrastructure. So it's space that we need within the hospital, and that can be provided, for example, using a prefab, but that needs to be granted and it needs to be applied for. So that's one part. And the second part is staffing. So it's about approval to recruit additional staff or to extend the working hours of existing staff. So this is what's frustrating in this year. There's some things, and there's, you know, tragedies that happen all across the county, and we can't do anything about it. It's life, and life is really cruel sometimes. But this is solvable. There is no way that 2 out of 3 of our women who are going through breast surgery, not everybody's female going through breast surgery, but that 2 out of 3 are not getting their chemo in time if they're required. And that has not happened just this year. It happened last year. It's been happening since 2023. For the last 3 years, only a third of people are actually hitting the targets. But yet, if you look at other hospitals, 100% can actually hit the targets. 100%. You don't have to wait. And that's exactly where it should be. If it's my mum or my sister or my next door neighbour or whoever is listening to this programme, they deserve it, they're entitled to it, and they should get it, and it's fixable. So really what we need now is we will have surgical hubs, hopefully we'll have an ambulatory centre as well, but we need short-term solutions here that actually that deal with this. So we need to look at the work practices in terms of recruiting additional staff or extending the working hours for people in there to allow us to use the space that is there, and also provide additional space. Look at a prefab that would be able to actually increase the capacity for both haematology and this service. And like the one thing that you hear all the time, and I know it from talking to people and people very close to me, is our oncology service and those that work within it is second to none. It's brilliant. It's first class. You know, it's just space and personnel that we need to solve, and it shouldn't take 3 years to solve this, Greg.
Yeah, it really, really shouldn't. And we're going to have to make our inquiries on this as well, because it's crazy. And as you quite rightly pointed out, you know, this is our families, our loved ones. You know, it's just a stress. And also we need to know how many are getting the treatment beyond 12 weeks if we hear from consultants saying that the treatment can be ineffectual thereafter. You know, listen, thanks so much for your time. I really
thanks,
do appreciate
Greg.
It. I don't want to just stay where you are. Any update on presidential candidates? This is in no way to take away from the seriousness of that, but you're the vice leader of the party, deputy leader, so it'd be remiss of me not to ask. What's the story? When are you going to decide if you're backing Ms. Murphy or running your own?
Yeah, look, we're, you know, first of all, the election isn't until the end of October, possibly the first week in November. So we're quite still a bit away about it. But like, you know, during the autumn or during the kind of what's called the silly season sometimes in politics, like I know everybody or at least the media is kind of focused on this year. I think most people are focused on other issues like cost of living and so on. But look, from our point of view, we have to make a decision. We're probably going to make that decision in the next couple of weeks. Look, there's big decisions to be made about whether we stand internally a candidate ourselves. We endorse somebody or we endorse another person that's already in the field. Nothing's ruled in, nothing's ruled out, to tell you the God's honest truth at the minute. We've had a consultation with the party membership. Some of that kind of happens in a vacuum because you don't know who's really in the field or who's the other runners, and things have changed and even in the last 2 weeks. But there has been a consultation, so that's done. So now it's just for the leadership to sit down, and I assume we'll be doing that over the next couple of weeks and making the decision, making our intentions clear.
Have you any preference yourself?
The key thing for me is, like, I'm not really that interested in the personalities or, you know, all that. The key thing for me is this is an election, and like the reason I'm involved in politics is I want to end British rule in my country. I believe that's going to happen. I believe that I and my party is going to be part of that, and I believe that this election, the president who advocates openly for Irish unity and the preparation, the groundwork that needs to be done for it would be very, very important. So that will be a big factor. The second thing is, like, just on the issues we talked about yesterday, the reason I'm in politics is because I can't stand that either. And I believe in a better, fairer Ireland. So the big prize here is to get into government, to be able to deliver real change. So we also have to think about if we were standing one of our, you know, high profile leaders in the party, what impact that would have in the general election and therefore the impact, you know, that it would have to our ambition and our plans there. So there's a lot to weigh up.
It is. So just like, because I've said this on the show before, that would you see that as a gamble if you were to put forward a Michelle O'Neill or a Mary Lou McDonald, whoever it might be? And let's just say it wasn't necessarily a successful campaign, though you'd go into it believing you could be successful, that could have a negative maybe knock-on effect then when the general elections roll around. Is that what you're saying, or am I misreading that?
No, what I was actually saying, Greg, is if we stood a candidate who won the presidency, therefore they would not be in a position to be part of that team in the general election, and that has to be weighed up as well. Every candidate who goes into an election of this nature will go in to win it. That's not been in any way presumptive or in any way taking anything for granted, but these are the things you have to weigh up. So there's obviously benefits in relation to, you know, there's major change happening in this country. It's without a doubt, and we will have a United Ireland within a number of years. We will have that referendum, and the fact that we're not, you know, the government is not planning for it is a complete dereliction of duty. So a president that actually would be somebody who would advocate for a new planned Ireland, it would be very, very beneficial. But on the other hand, if that president was one of our leaders, what impact would that have in terms of the change that we want to bring about? Because the best way you're going to actually have a United Ireland is having a government.
So obviously the logical thing there is to throw your weight behind someone whose vision of a United Ireland aligns with yours, Sinn Féin's, that is.
Yeah, like these are the options, and that's why I say that nothing is off the table and nothing's on the table, you know. So like it all depends on who's coming forward, who's available to put their name forward, who's willing to do that, you know, whether they're a third party, whether they're, you know, like an independent that is a United Irelander, and somebody that's, you know, socially conscious and wants the type of change that we want, or whether it's somebody within our own party, or indeed whether it's the likes of a Catherine Connolly. So like, you know, the party leadership, you know, we've obviously spoke briefly in relation to this here, but there will be decisions now to be made in the next couple of weeks. And they're the kind of, that's the honest reflection that we will have in relation to, you know, competing aims in relation to all of this. So, I'm a kind of betwixt and between as to what should be done at the minute. But there's a huge opportunity. And as I said, you know.
But on an individual level, could you see yourself rowing in behind Ms. Connolly?
Look, I know Catherine for many years. The party hasn't spoken to her. She hasn't, I don't think, approached us yet in relation to this in terms of the presidency. Her politics are very good. I haven't heard her speak in relation to Irish Unity or New Ireland much. I know she's made some comments in terms of the election, but if we were going to back any candidate, I'm sure there will be kind of meetings and discussions in relation to their views and some of those things. So that would need to be explored before we would go any further. But as I said, and I've said this honestly, nothing ruled in, and there's nothing ruled out.
Sometimes I have a built-in distrust of politicians, but on this one, I actually believe you haven't made your mind up yet as a party. Yeah. All right, listen, thanks for that. Take care of yourself. And of course, that very important issue we talked about previously, that stands there as well, and we'll put that out a little later on also. Thank you. That's Sinn Féin Deputy Leader, Spokesperson on Finance, Piers Doherty. Now, you are being invited to join the Donegal Intercultural Platform for Asian Voices in Donegal. It's a celebration of diversity through music, art and food in the Trinity Hall, Letterkenny. And it's on this Saturday and runs from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. So it's a busy 3 hours smack bang in the middle of Saturday. I have Jay Yee Luke, who's with me in studio. Good morning to you.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us. And we have Nolunga. I'm going to do this myself, please, Nolunga, because every day is a learning day. Nolunga Sholugi. Sholugu.
Yeah.
I was close. My apologies.
You're very close.
but the next time, there will be no ambiguity at all. When we talk about Asian voices and Asian culture and being Asian, Jai, it's a broad spectrum within that categorization, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's quite a lot of countries, so like in Asia, and they all have quite different cultures. So it's really hard to kind of like say that they're similar and then joined together. But there's bound to be something that we can find that are similar, especially with, you know, with culture and with like creativity and like with food. These things are something we can talk about to kind of find some similarity and kind of like connect with each other.
Yeah. What part of Asia is your heritage?
I grew up in Ireland, but I was born in Malaysia. So I am Southeast Asian.
And for you, what is what is Malaysian culture for you, if you were to describe it?
Malaysian culture, well, everything I think about is just the food. And then like...
I haven't had breakfast. Go easy on me, Jay. Go on.
The food, that's something that we always talk about. You know, we cook at home and we go out and eat. It's always about food for us. And then the language, because in Malaysia, it's quite multicultural. There's three major kind of race. So there's Malaysian Indian, Malaysian Native Malay, and then there's Malaysian Chinese. So that's
what a melting pot though of food and spice and
it's
all
crazy.
That type of stuff. Yeah.
It's crazy. So like we blend with each other. So there are certain things like Chinese food, they get mixed with Malaysian food. Mm. So there's a new flavor there. So that's kind of how they join with one another. And then it becomes Malaysian food. So when we say we're Malaysian, we don't like separate it like I just did. Malaysian Indian, Malaysian Malay. We just call ourselves Malaysian.
Of course you do. Yeah, but I think it's really like, you know, where we are at now, there's been influences. And you could argue Ireland's on that journey itself as well. How nice is it? As I say, you've spent most of your life here, but I referenced your heritage when I asked where that lies. How nice is it then to have a window to sort of, you know, meet up with other people from Asia, but also actually to sort of spread, you know, culture, art, music, food with the wider population?
So for me, it's always like I wanted to gather all the Asians, kind of like get the community together to kind of show ourselves kind of like through our culture and creativity. But although I don't understand a lot about it because I grew up here, but I do hear from my parents about like kind of what's the culture in our own country. And then I always find it's really interesting and colorful, and I really want to share that with the people here. So,
but even step into it yourself a little bit,
yeah,
as you
and step
say,
into
yeah,
it and learn it myself, because every time I'm like kind of listening to stories or even just searching it up myself, I learn something new. It's like, oh, that's what we do at home. Yeah. I didn't even know that because I've never been like interact with it enough. So yeah, so that's just. Yeah.
No longer, it's exciting, isn't it? Because, you know, we've had days like this for different continents, different parts of the world, and it's great to see, I'm not sure if it's the first, but a focus on Asian voices, Asian people.
This one is our first with Donegal Intercultural Platform. I think because we are blessed to have Jay. He is on work placement, and this project is kind of like covered her university project. So we are excited.
So talk to me a little bit more then about what we can look forward to on the day no longer.
It's kind of like a celebration of culture, tradition and connection. Kind of like it's a chance for all people of ages to come together and share their heritage and enjoy the richness of South Asian life. So kind of like the event is combined with food and dancing and maybe more, but it's a celebration of identity.
Yeah, so it's from 2 to 5 p.m. in Trinity Hall, Letterkenny. The food tasting is at, sorry to keep focusing on the food, at 4:15. But you will get a sense of the richness of Asian culture. Jay, when you were putting this out there in terms of sort of getting the Asian community to get involved in this, because it's a first time doing it, right? So you don't really know if they're too busy or disinterested or whatever. What kind of a feedback have you had?
It's pretty good. A lot of the communities are really willing to help. Like, I've contacted the Indian community and then the Filipino community. So they're the two quite big ones in Donegal here. So they're very happy to help. And then because there's up in Donegal here, the Chinese community, I think it's not as big as in Dublin. So I did contact someone from Dublin to come up to perform that day.
Is that Lan Yin?
Yeah, the Lan Yin Ming Yue. They are playing like traditional Chinese instruments, you know, the harps and like the one that's similar to a harp, Gu Zeng, and there is the pipa. They're the traditional instruments for Chinese music. So they'll be performing there. And then we also have a Japanese lady that she's coming in. She does calligraphy. So she's Kazuko Uchida. I think I'm pronouncing it right. And then
it's terrible when people can't pronounce things right, isn't it? No longer.
Yeah. And then she'll be doing like a calligraphy performances.
All right. Okay. And you know, the thing about the music scene here in Donegal, I know there will be musicians here that will be fascinated to go down and sort of get a sense of traditional Asian music. And who's to say a collaboration couldn't come from it? And then you'll get foodie types that are looking for, you know, inspiration in terms of food and what have you. So there's got to be lots of different interests in this no longer.
So we are expecting vibrant performance, traditional dance, you know, to modern music, and the workshops for families and for henna and storytelling. So most importantly is the joy of people coming together.
That's it, actually, because these events are joyful in that regard, because you get all different people in. They could be neighbours that haven't met. You know, you never know, but it's lovely in this environment where people can get together and learn a bit about each other, or not learn anything, just sort of enjoy the music, you know. We put a lot of pressure on people to learn all the time. Jay, what are you going to be doing on the day? Now, I know you've been involved in the organising of it. Well, you're going to be rustling up a dish, singing a song.
I'm not singing. Not really much of
She'll
a singer.
She'll be hosting.
Hosting. Yeah. I kind of sensed it. I was wondering, could I get you into a corner here?
Yeah, I'll be hosting at the event, so I'll be speaking and hopefully running around.
MCing.
Yeah. And talking to people.
Looking forward to it. Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Okay. Anything else you want to add, Nalunga? Because I know there's probably stuff that you wanted to make sure we mentioned.
No, we just want people to come along, bring your friends and experience the colours, the sound and the taste of South Asian food.
Yeah, and there's face painting and all that type of stuff as well. A nice wee thing, I think, for the kids that have gone back to school, a nice little thing to break up the weekend for them, or maybe it could be the last sort of nice thing that they do before they head back to school as well, because it's open for everyone, isn't it? It's right smack bang. Jay, anything else you want to add?
No, just that's the date, so anyone is free to come along, connect with everyone.
Yep, so it's this Saturday. It is the end of the month already. It's at the Trinity Hall in Letterkenny. It runs from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. You're being invited to join the Asian Voices in Donegal. It's a celebration of diversity. There's music there, as we heard, art and food, and even just learning how diverse Asian voices can be as well. So lots to look forward to. Brilliant stuff. And the Donegal Intercultural Platform, always busy, Nalunga.
Oh, yes.
Always planning events, working
always
in the community.
November, the next one will be November, Women of the World Conference. So maybe we'll come here and talk to you about
it. Okay, get the word out. Listen, both of you, thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
For having us.
No, it's our pleasure. We'll be back with more after we take a quick break. We're going to return to the story of little angels. Parents received notification yesterday. Sorry, my mic was low. They received notification yesterday that there's going to be a delayed opening to the school and no further info. Whomever was providing that info doesn't have that information to hand, it would seem, or can't pass it on. Now, as I said a little earlier on as well, this has been flagged by people in the know. Of course, we had the news that there would be further accommodation. Then we had the news that there were two teacher places that were okayed. I'm outside the situation. I'm thinking, wow, okay. But those within the situation said, hello, we haven't got really a pathway to opening on time in September. They were saying this back in June, and here we are, and they were proven right. We've spoken quite a bit to Joe Corkery of the Special Needs Parents Network, and I'm delighted to welcome Joe back onto the show. Joe, sorry for the long intro there. Just wanted to catch everyone up who perhaps are only tuning in at this point.
No bother, Greg. Thanks a million for having me.
Right, so what's your reading of this message, a delayed open, more info when we get it?
So I suppose I'm coming on as a parent of a child, an 11-year-old little girl who attends Little Angels. And I suppose from our perspective, as you say, we got a message around lunchtime yesterday to say that there would be a delayed opening to the school. And I suppose as a parent, and like all the other parents at the school, we feel like the children need to get back to school on Monday as was planned. This uncertainty and, the lack of information with regards to when our children can return to school leads to huge anxiety for parents and also for children. Like any child out there listening, or any parent out there listening, we're getting our kids ready for school. And, especially for the children that attend Little Angels, there's huge preparations ongoing to try to re-establish routines, get the kids ready for school. And they all are so excited about going back
and
to school.
And I know our kids are the most important thing, Joe, and I want to speak specifically about your daughter. But I know the kids are the focus here. But mums and dads, too, have plans. They might be arranging return to work courses or other things based on an opening of a school. And in every school around the country, the schools open when they're supposed to open, right? It's unfair, specifically for these children and their parents who build their lives around their kids like we all do, that now there's this uncertainty. It's very disruptive.
Yeah, very, very disruptive. So speaking for myself with all of, a lot of parents, I work, so I don't know now when I can return to work. And, as you said, we have a lot of other responsibilities. So knowing, I suppose there's a huge wealth in knowledge, so knowing when our kids can get back to school is really important. And having that, being able to kind of work towards that date, re-establish those routines, as I was saying, and you know, get the kids back to school. We all look forward to it, you know, when it's kind of a fresh new academic year. So like that uncertainty is really disappointing, to be honest. Right.
Talk to me about the impact this is having on your daughter.
Yeah, so Rosie's 11. She's actually listening right now. So she absolutely loves school, and I want to be very clear about that. All of the children that attend Little Angels love their school. We love the teachers, we love the SNAs, we love the school. It's so important from an education perspective, just like for every other child, education is really important, but also from a social impact perspective. Like a lot of our kids, they don't have the same social lives as other children have, particularly during this long summer, you know, long summer weeks. So a lot of the kids, you know, attending Little Angels maybe haven't, they don't have like their friend networks, they don't have summer camps, they don't have the same social input during the summer months. So getting back to school is, you know, reestablishing that and going back and seeing all of our lovely friends. And as I said, the fantastic team at Little Angels. So we're also looking forward to going back to school. And as you say, the uncertainty and the anxiety now is just, it's really disappointing. So hopefully we'll hear soon about when the school will open.
Some of the words in this, go ahead, sorry, Joe, yep.
Parents, once we heard, parents have reached out to the school to say that we will do whatever is needed to be done to help the school open as soon as possible. Like, I mean, we can drop tools and we can get in there and, you know, and like the local community love Little Angels. We're all in support of the school. So whatever we can do to support the school, get opening on Monday, we will do.
That being said, reading from the message that was sent out, there is still considerable work to be done on the current site to make it safe for the pupils to return. And there is considerable work to be done to get us into the new school. They are awaiting confirmation from governments in relation to the delayed start. So really, from the sounds of it, there's no timeline on these considerable works either, which is really a worry. It's not like it'll be Tuesday or Wednesday. And I don't know the ins and outs of what needs to be done, but it doesn't sound like even, you know, with the best will of parents and guardians, that it's that type of work. You know, and any work that has to be done then has to be signed off on, presumably. How long does that take? You know, this is, I don't want to amplify the problem, don't get me wrong, but this is concerning, Joe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what you're highlighting is the uncertainty around it. Like, we don't know if it's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, or the following week, or the following, as you said earlier, the following month.
We have
no idea. Yeah, exactly. And our kids, as I said, love their school. We love the school, and we need it to open as soon as possible because it's so important from an education perspective and from a social perspective for our kids,
for sure.
As a school for all kids. Our kids are as entitled to it. And like, it'll break my heart now next Monday. Rosie will be sitting watching her brothers head off to school and getting their uniforms on and head off. And she's going to be like, she knows, like, she's not able to go to school. Mm. And that's the reality for parents, you know, as well as trying to manage those emotions.
Of course.
You know, because school is so important.
Yeah. And if Rosie could just stick her fingers in her ears for just 1 second, we also need them out from under our feet a little bit sometimes as well. Right?
Yes.
Right, Rosie, you can take your fingers out now. You can take your fingers out now.
It's been a lovely summer, but it's been a long one. Absolutely. No, it's great to get back into routine. Yeah, everybody's looking forward to it.
All right. Love you to Rosie. Love to Rosie. And thanks, Joe.
You're very good.
Really appreciate your time. Take care of yourself. Right. A caller says, I'm a parent of a child attending the Little Angels School, and everyone got a text yesterday, and the phones have been going off nonstop. People are complaining about it taking a week, but people should be lucky that we are getting the school at all. It'll take as long as it takes. People are giving out, but how many of them would be willing to go in and help out? It takes a week. If it takes a week, it takes a week. Well, I don't know where maybe you've got some inside information, because other parents don't have this information as to how long it might take. We heard from Joe there, who literally by coincidence answering your response. Parents are ready to up tools. And I presume if you're in that group, I presume it's a WhatsApp group, you would have seen parents coming together and offering to go in and actually help, if that would help at all. I don't think the parents would be found wanting. And I think, you know, and you're a parent of one of the children in there, so I feel almost disrespectful in saying this, but it's not my intention. These kids deserve every other kid in the country was told what day they're going back, and they're going back on that day, and mums and dads know, and the family know, and granny and granddads and all that. You know, why can parents not be a little peed off if it's their particular children? Considering that they've had to fight themselves to actually get places in this school. Like, you know, it's been a long journey, but that journey hasn't concluded yet. So I have great sympathy